Derek asked me to continue on through Matthew chapter 5, and so we'll just cover a couple of verses, verses 13 through 16 this morning. But I do want to draw us back into where the setting was. At the beginning of the chapter, it says, Jesus saw the crowd, and he was up on the mountain, and he gathered the 12 and began to teach them. But there's two crowds. So he says, the crowd there at his feet, which are the 12, and then there's the mass behind them. And so as we're picturing this, I want you to place yourself in the 12. I want you to place yourself up close to Jesus, where he has gathered you in on a hillside, a little bit of breeze, lots of sticky grass and lots of rocks, because that's like, you know, Kansas and it's like the Holy Land, you know. It's all about the same. And so you're gathered there at the feet of Jesus, and he's talking. And he's going to say some things that you have to listen to and decide. When he says you, is he talking to you or a different you? And so I want you to listen as we read through this. We'll take it kind of piece at a time and place yourself right there up front with the 12. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. So he says, you are the salt. But you have to answer the question then of, is he right? Is he talking to me, or is he talking to the me's behind me? Which you? When he says, you are, which you? And so he starts in this conversation of salt. And of course, in their day, they knew that salt was a purifying factor. And they knew that salt was a preserving factor. And they had started the industry of using salts to actually cause dyes to stick to cloth a little bit better. Salt was very important. Across the Roman world, there were some roads that were called salt roads because that's how they moved salt, because it was that important. And actually, some communities used salt as currency. And there was a guy whose name loosely translated into English that oversaw all the salt trade, and he was the saltinator. You got Superman, you got Batman, you got the saltinator. I'm not sure if he wears an S and has a cape or not, but this was a real issue. And so they had these things that they knew about salt. Oh, but we're so much smarter now, right? So many things we know more now. Now, we still use salt on our food, don't we? We still use it for purifying, we still use it to preserve, and we still use it actually to cause dyes to stick to clothing. But we've also added oil fracking and killing weeds and killing germs because we're just so much smarter about our salt. So if we use more salt now than they did then, does that mean the lesson got smaller or bigger? And so it says, you are the salt. Now, interestingly, because we're so much smarter now, we know that sodium chloride can't actually quit being sodium chloride. He says, well, if the salt loses its saltiness, we know that doesn't happen. Except that it did. Because they got their salt from the Dead Sea. And that's a lot of different sediments, a lot of different minerals in there. And so when they would have their lumps of salt and use them to rub on their various foods to cause preservation and those kinds of things, they would note over time that their lump would change color. And eventually, they would notice that their lump was not preserving the way it used to. Well, what do you call a mineral deposit that no longer preserves things? Call that their mud. Now, if we're standing in your living room, And you're holding a lump of mud, what do you plan to do with that lump of mud? I'm going to guess you're probably going to throw it outside. Salt that has lost its saltiness is good only to be cast out and trampled on by men. Oh, we're so much smarter. We do things so much more technical. I'm sure that your delivery system would be smoother. But if the salt has lost its salt, then it's... So he says, you are. You are the salt of the earth. So is he talking to you? Is he meaning not you, but the other yous? And if he is talking to you, as you're seated there at his feet, you still have to ask the question, is, am I really? Is he right? He doesn't stop there. He says, you're also the light of the world. It says, you are the light of the world. wonder if that was an accusation or a command or a description. And if he is accusing you, would you be found guilty? You're the light. So, how should light act? Because we are so much smarter now than we ever were before, we know light has different properties. Like, we know that light is a wave, and we know that light is a particle. And it's interesting that, because waves, generate out, they go out in a pattern direction, and they spread. And where something blocks the wave doesn't continue there, but it continues the other places, and the wave keeps going. But light is also a particle. And particles fill the spaces they're not in. And so even when a particle is blocked, the particle will go around what is blocked and begin to fill in what is behind. Do you suppose the God who said, "Let there be light," knew that the light he made was both a wave and a particle? Do you suppose that Jesus, when he said, you are the light of the world, that he knew he was comparing you to something that had multiple capacities to go places where it's not supposed to go? Or things are supposed to be trying to block you? And you can go there anyway? You are the light of the world. Do you remember power outages as kids? Do they happen less now? Because as a kid, it seemed like it was two or three times a year. And they were fun, right? Because there was one flashlight in the house. That was mom's job. And then everything else was candles. And you couldn't see anything unless you had your candle. And so you'd go and you grab your candles and everyone bring out, you would light up the candles and set them up. And matches, books of matches. Remember books of matches in the old days? I have a matchbook collection. From all the different, because you go to every restaurant, every gas station, every hotel, everyone had their little book of match, it was a really cheap way to collect something when you were a kid. And I've got this collection of match books from all the places we've been. Oh, but you don't use those when the power's out. You go get the old brown IGA ones, the ugly ones, and you strike those matches and wear those out, but you keep the nice ones, you know. But I remember because you'd light the candles and then you could see. Anyone still have candles in their house? Anyone still use candles in your house? Because they're so much more efficient than electricity, right? But isn't it fascinating that we're drawn to this model? I actually intended to swing by my office as I came through Manhattan to bring, and I got partway through town and was busy thinking through this stuff and forgot to get my. Anyway, I have a 2,000-year-old oil lamp from Bethlehem. It is one of the most boring things you've ever seen. It's maybe this wide and about that deep, and it's maybe that tall. Very, very boring. It's a very common poor person's lamp. And it's kind of an ochreish, orangish blah. But that's their lamp. It says, "You're the light of the world." It's our version of a candle. A little bit of oil, a little bit of olive oil in it, and a little wick hanging out. Would not have burned as clean and bright as our candles, but it's still a candle. Their version. It's interesting that in our modern world, with all these amazing things, we even have LED lights that can burn for 10,000 years, they say. I don't know. We'll see someday. We still have candles. It's just interesting to think that light always draws. Well, let's look at it this way. When it's dark and the power's out and you light your candle, what do you do with it? Don't you set it somewhere so you can see? Nothing ever really changes, does it? Here's the other interesting thing about candles, is if you're in the dark and someone sets a candle up, what do? You look at the candle, don't you? And then you look at the stuff that the candle lights up around it. And then if you really are aggressive, you can pick up the candle and take it with you so the light goes where you go. So you can see. Jesus says, "You're the light." But when he says you, is he talking about you or someone else? Because just like the salt, if he says you're the salt, he says you're the light, you still have to say, is he right? And am I being that? And he doesn't pause there. You're the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. True. What would you call a city on a hill that was invisible? I think you'd call that stupid. I love the house on a hill. You know, when you drive by and see, everyone loves a good house on a hill, right? It sits up there and you say, oh, wow, look at that house on a hill. And you say, oh, that'd be a neat place to live. And I was kind of contemplating in Kansas, does it mean it gets blown away more quickly or not? I'm not sure. But you know, every once in a while you see a house on a hill that's kind of in the hill. You ever seen those? Where you got a roof line kind of on top of the dirt, and you kind of got a front of the house, but everything else is buried in the back. And it's like, I'm sure it's very efficient. Sure, the earth provides great insulation and temperature control and all that kind of stuff. But you don't look at that and say, ah. You go, What if you had a house in a hill? Totally in a hill. Not a house on a hill, not a house partially in a hill, but totally in a hill. You know what we call that? We call that a hobbit hole. They just have a door. And to live in those, you've got to be really short and have hairy feet. But, you know, so you look at that, you say, oh, look, a door. Oh, there's a hole. No one looks at something like that and says, oh, that's so majestic. But it's the thing on top of the hill. And so just think of what that looks. So you've got a city on a hill that's been hidden. What would that do for the city? Would that drive economy? Bring in jobs? Cause good repair and pride of ownership? Anyone ever drive old Route 66? You know, now that the highways go and those cities have become invisible, what condition are they in? How many jobs do they hold? You are a city on a hill. A city can't be hidden. And if you did, it would be kind of stupid, because then you're not really going to keep being the city on the hill. Just curious, has anyone ever noticed you're different? You are salt, you're light, you're a city on a hill. That would be distinctive, wouldn't it? Just thinking through, if Jesus is busy saying you are, you ought to have proof of that. And be able to go, you know, he's right. I'm different. Now, some of that different can be a little weird, and that's okay. You know, when people say, oh, you're different. Well, but different for the sake of the Lord. You're sitting on a hill, can't be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. No one puts the lamp under the bowl. Now, do you remember bowl cuts? Now, some of us are over 30 and we remember bowl cuts, and there's laughter, you know. But do you remember, I turned 50 a few weeks ago, and Brenda threw a birthday celebration / mockery thing, you know, how that goes when you're 50, and the black napkins and the black plates and all that kind of stuff, and invite a bunch of folks, and Virginia Beto came. So Virginia is a lady who, when I grew up in Cincinnati as a kid, she worked in the children's department of the church I attended, White Oak Christian Church in the northwestern side of Cincinnati. She worked with kids, and it was roughly 1977. And it would have been give or take a year or so there. And we had a children's musical, and it was Cool in the Furnace. I can still sing some of those songs in my head, by the way. And it was about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so she comes to the birthday party, And she says, you probably ought to open my card. So I open her card, and she has five pictures of my childhood. And my brother had a bowl cut. And you know, we look at that and we think, how would you? But then I was wearing a turtleneck, too. So anyway, you know, the pattern kind that we wore in 1977. You know, it's just funny. Whoever thought a bowl cut was a good idea? I mean, where did that idea come from? And so we look at that and we all laugh. We laugh several times. The more we think about it, we still think it's funny. And hey, how about bull heads? Bull hearts? Bull lives? Bull faith? How come we're not laughing? But you realize what the bowl cut was, when we had a man-made thing that theoretically thunked on somebody's head, some poor kid, and they went, you know, and we fit the world on there and design it that way, and then you're done. Do we live in a world that does any bowl lives? Here's what we said, trim around the sides, okay, here you go. It says, no, people don't light a lamp, put it under a bowl. You are salt, you are light, you are sitting on a hill, you are bold. Are you under a bowl? Because he plays it out as an option. And what happens if we take my little earthen lamp that should be in my hand, and you should also go, oh, that looks old, and it's not there. You can just pretend. And we put it down, and we put the bowl over it. What happens? Well, we're going to get a black mark on the top of that bowl. But eventually, what's going to happen? My little lamp's going to go out. It's going to use up all the available oxygen, and it's going to sputter, and it's going to die. Bowl lives. No, instead we take the light and we put it on a stand. So you can stand the light. But that's what we did when the power was out, was you take the light and you put it up somewhere, and you got multiples of them, and you tried to put them at the higher places so you could kind of see everything, and then it became kind of a game. Because you got to play with the lights. But you looked to the light to see where you're going. So when you have the light, you stand the light, because you can't stand the darkness. But what if you can stand the darkness? Where's your light? Because nobody takes a candle and doesn't light it and sticks it up high in the dark where you can't see it because it's not lit. So if you can stand the light, I guess you can't stand the darkness. But if you can stand the darkness, maybe you don't stand the light. Jesus says, not under a bowl, put it on a stand. He gives light to everyone in the house. And then he says, in the same way, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Now catch the shift here. He said, you're this, you're this, you're this. There's some natural conclusions on it. But right at the end, when he says, in the same way, let your light shine. Okay? Ever been camping and had flashlights? Bright flashlights. And what's the number one rule of camping when you have bright flashlights? Don't shine them in the face. Point them at the ground. Why? Because you're going to blind me, you idiot. You know, you're going to trip on it. There's tent pegs. You know, there's all sorts of dangers in the dark. Don't shine it in the light. It's interesting to think, though, that flashlights are actually trying to change the rules of light. Because it's got that parabolic inside thing. You got the bulb. It's all supposed to be channeling the light, so it only uses the wave, not the particle. And so when you channel the wave, it becomes more intense, and then it blinds. If you shine it in somebody's face. The candles, they don't blind. They just draw. See, I shine a flashlight where I want to see something specific. I light a candle when I want to see something in close. And he says, let your light shine before men, that they... Pause there for a second. Your salt, your light, your city. Let your light shine so they. How much of our life is spent doing so I? If we're really good at it, maybe we get into some so we. What if it was so they? Well, so they what? So they may see. Okay, now that follows. Good logical process. Okay, so I'm going to live so they may see. May see what? There's a lot of stuff to see. He says, so that they may see your good deeds. I want to shorten that. I want to just take so that they may see you. Leave the R off for now. When you become visible, then the things that you say and do become visible. If you're invisible, you're sitting on a hill that is hidden, and then you go, well, that's just a stupid idea anyway. So it says, so they may see. Let your light shine so they may see you. Now add the R. Your good deeds. So you let your light shine so they can see your good deeds. Now, once you say, well, it's about my good deeds, then there's only two options for why we would do good deeds. And one is that I do good deeds because I'm so great. So they can look at me and everyone goes, oh, what a great person. Can you imagine what life would be like if everything you ever did was on display so people would think you are good? By the way, how real is reality TV? Ever notice that reality shows are very unreal? They set up settings that don't really happen anywhere. And if they did, they'd really be... Why would you do that? You know, there's not reality there. You know where the reality is? You. You're the reality show. Because you're real. I could pinch you and you'd say, why are you doing that? You're real. It says, let your light shine so they may see your good deeds. So your deeds are the reality show. But your deeds are either about you or they're about something bigger. That's the only option. Because you're never going to do good deeds for a reason smaller than you. You're only going to do good deeds for yourself or something bigger. And Jesus says that they may see your good deeds and praise. Ah, there's the point. We all know this. It's not rocket science. But my good deeds are for the praise of something larger. Praise your Father in heaven. So what if Christians as a people heard the message, and Jesus told them, told the 12, told you as you're sitting in the 12, and you have to decide if the you is you or some other you, you're salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. You're the city on the hill. A bowl is an option, but a stand is an option. What if Christians lived like that and heard the message, so they? Let your light shine. So they see God. It's not about you, so you don't have the pressure of being perfect. You just have the pressure of pointing to the God who is. So here's the thing. If you're in the 12, and Jesus is speaking, and you're within several arms' length, and he's teaching you, and he's saying, you are. You still have to answer, am I? And then you have options. You have salt or mud. You have light or bowl. Would you pray with me? Lord, take our lives. Let them be yours. Take our shape, our size, our hopes, our dreams, our brokennesses, and our places we've healed. And cause those to be part of who we are and how we're lit. And Lord, I pray that you would teach us to chuckle at the bowl and to never be tempted to use it, but to be drawn to the simple beauty of light. Not as a blinding source, but as a source that leads us to a little bit of safety, a little bit of warmth, and a little bit of beauty that reminds us that there's something much larger than us. Help us be your salt, your light, your city, just as you told us we are. Help us be what you said we are. It's in your holy, precious name. We pray both, hallelujah and amen.